Hello and welcome, South Carolina, from the Midlands to the Upstate. We are happy to have you join the Yard Pro Show today, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's an absolute delight to be here this morning. What do you say, Scott?
I do say.
A little wet outside, however, right?
It is.
You know, we need to let the listeners know. They can find us during the week. It's very simple at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to our retail stores throughout the state of South Carolina. Sorry. Text. People texting me at the beginning.
You and technology.
Well, I tell you. Man. People texting you, they know you're on the radio. It's like, why would you text me? You know I'm opening up the show, right? Break my concentration. You know I can't concentrate.
Nope.
Right? I don't know. I'm fairly decent at multitasking. I can drive and talk at the same time.
That's a plus.
Yeah, that is a plus. So you are tuned into the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. We invite you to visit us during the week, as I said, on our webpage at carolinafreshfarms.com. Also, believe y'all got a Carolina Fresh Farms has our individual Facebook page up and running now, which is a little bit different, kind of a corporate one Facebook page. So you can find us there as well as on Instagram. But if you could go to Facebook if you're inclined and use that and like us, we would appreciate it. And it'll also help you keep up with some announcements and things of that nature about your yard, your landscape, because that's what it's about. That's what we're about. And that's what the Yard Pro Show is about, Scott, is knowledge and information in the lawn and landscape, from anything and everything we do as the landscape specialist headquarters, I guess I'd say in the state, with six stores presently, a seventh store coming very soon in the Somerville
this week,
market.
I think.
Yeah. So getting ready to open up. So with the seven retail locations in the state, certainly we feel like we've got you covered no matter where you are. So whether you live in the upstate, the Midlands, or have a retreat or live in the coastal market, Charleston market, we certainly would like to share some information with you and help you learn a little bit more about how to properly install and manage after the fact. I think that's a huge key, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Being a very large sod producer in the state, it's very easy to sell sod and just forget about it. You know, you as the consumer who may put it in your lawn, or us as a company who manufactures or grows that product. But that's the whole gist of it, Scott. And that's the gist of the Yard Pro Show, is for you to be able to call, interact, you know, without you, the participant. You know, take yourself from the listenership, become a participant. That's what makes the show work. That's what makes it so much fun, because we all learn, not just you, the listener, but myself and you as well, Scott. We all learn as we talk and discuss the hot topics within our lawn and landscape. As a matter of fact, the phone lines are open. You can give us a call this morning at 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And as always, you can text us at 71307. So, Scott, let's first and foremost, let's say what's going on. You look all spiffy today.
I am spiffy.
All dressed up, wearing the khaki britches.
Khaki.
Got that fancy shirt on with that nice sunburst logo. You know, that's like the most sun I've seen in the last 24 hours is on your left chest there. You know, been a little rainy, right? Mm-hmm. But the Southern Home and Garden Show, sponsored by the Greenville Home Builders Association, is taking place this weekend. Started yesterday, kicked off. Will run today from 10 to what, 6?
7 o'clock.
And tomorrow,
12 to 5
tomorrow at the Greenville Convention Center, formerly the TD Convention Center, but now called the Greenville Convention Center. For those of you tuned in and from this market and been here a long time, maybe you're a native, as we all know, it was once called the Textile Hall. So you can find us there in the booth today, tomorrow, today from 10 a.m. till 7 p.m. tomorrow from, you said noon tomorrow?
Noon to 5.
In booth 313. Mm-hmm. Would love to have you stop by. You know, great opportunity. I know it sounds crazy, Scott, but if they got a little pestering weed, or maybe they can't identify the grass they have in the lawn, maybe they got an issue on the shrubbery, bring a sample by. It's a good time. I mean, we say that all during the week at the stores. You know, identification is the key to a lot of the pests in the landscape. and making a lot of decisions in the landscape. So as far as it goes, Scott, what's, you know, other than the Home and Garden Show, that's quite the production. Other than that, kind of what's new this week, you know, hot topics, the weather. It's been a little mild, but, man, it's been rainy once again. Imagine that. You know, I did a little bit of research. I was looking at the rainfall, and I lead this in because I think it comes back to maybe a little bit of information on some things you can expect in the landscape. A lot of times it's about predicting weather or looking at your most recent weather patterns, what kind of potential issues can it lead to. But, you know, since the beginning of the year, I had an individual tell me at their golf course in the upstate they'd had like 23 inches. Now, I looked up, which I think is very feasible because you get pockets of heavy rain here and there. I looked up National Weather Service, you know, GSP is where they report, and then again at the Columbia Airport. The upstate GSP has reported since January the 1st well over 12 inches of rain. We're about 7 inches above average at this point. The Midlands, however, have fared a little bit differently. They're right at 5 inches of rain, so they're kind of at their normal state year to date. But they're catching up quick because they had twice as much rain yesterday as what we had in the upstate. But it has definitely been a wet, wet winter.
So whoever has the valve, please shut it off for a while.
If you could turn that valve, it should be perpendicular 90 degrees to the pipe, okay? That means it's in the off position if it's just a simple check valve. But if you could turn that valve to the off position or maybe leave it partly cracked, just sort of trickle.
I'd be happy just 7 days.
But, you know, I don't know if I want 7 days, though. 7 days of no rain, man. Things begin, believe it or not, as wet as it is, things begin to dry out pretty quick, especially when the type of rain we're getting, we get these fronts, and then you get the wind behind it, and you get the cooler temperatures. Now, let's talk about what's coming up this week, because I think it's very pertinent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here we are wrapping up the week. What's coming up this week is not just a freeze, Scott, a hard freeze. I mean, looking in the upstate market, you know, today's 66, tomorrow 60 as highs. Our highs are not going to be terribly low, but let's look at our lows. I mean, we were in the 50s last night, 50s again tonight, 42. Come Monday night, we get back down to 37, a little bit frosty. Tuesday night, 23. You know, you compare that to Columbia, Tuesday night, 26. Not a whole lot of difference, folks. So we're talking about a hard freeze coming up, which I think is fine. I know a lot of people are going to be very concerned. You know, maybe their lawn has begun to transition, their warm season grass. Mm-hmm. Talked to some superintendents this week, and, you know, I don't know if there's a lot of concern. There's a few that did some renovation last year, so they have some immature grass. You know, it's not, hasn't been around for more than one summer or one winter yet. I think there may be some concern there on some immature grass. But if you have an established lawn, I think you will. I think what's not going to fare so well are the Bradford pears, the plants that are beginning to bloom.
Forsythias have bloomed.
Yeah. The forsythias will be okay. Yeah. They can tolerate it. But, you know, the Bradford pear, yes, I must admit, I still have that one lone.
So you're the
two-thirds of a Bradford pear in the front yard that it's every season I say it's coming down, and you just really I run out of time. I can sit here and say,
well,
I
like for a good ice storm.
Yeah, I'm waiting for a good ice storm. That's what's it. And we really hadn't had one. But, you know, we look at that and we go, you know, those things that have already popped out that are a little bit ahead of time, which there are a lot of things like that, enjoy them today and tomorrow because come Wednesday – they'll still be around come Wednesday morning, but by Thursday, Friday morning, give it a few days after that hard freeze, and I think you're going to see a lot of these things kind of go by the wayside. Shouldn't cause any major issue, but, you know, be aware of that. You know, don't lose your cool. It'll be okay. Scott, real quickly, we had a text here. It said, I had some early hibiscus that came out beautifully in May and June, but in July, something's attacking them and eating all the pre-flowering buds and eats on the leaves. Any idea what this could be? I know what it could be.
What's that?
Huh?
What?
It's the good old Japanese beetle, okay? Japanese beetles absolutely love hibiscus. I mean, love. To them, it's the filet mignon, right? soft, succulent, green growth. And what's odd, I've seen them attack a hibiscus before and eat the buds and ignore the leaves. They must like the smell. Of course, you know, the hibiscus they're talking about are the deciduous.
Rose of Sharon.
Yeah, Rose of Sharon that really don't have much of a they're not odoriferous. But I don't know. There must be something there because they love the buds for some reason. But that's a good indicator. You know, you can use a contact insecticide when you begin to see the flight of those so that when they munch on it, they perish. You could do that. But here's the other key. That's a good indicator that you have some grub issues either within your lawn, your landscape beds, or your neighboring yards. So if you're seeing that, that's a good indicator that you definitely need to do something from a grub control perspective. When's the best time to do that? Sometime probably, what would you say, mid-April to mid-May, depending on where you live in this state. Mm-hmm. If you live in the Midlands, certainly you'd hedge a little bit earlier because the soils warm up a little bit quicker.
And you could stay on top with an insecticide, but during July, don't use anything that's oil-based.
Yes. So we're going to go to the phone lines real quick. We have Ron in Simpsonville who has a quick question, I believe, about sod. Hello, Ron, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Good morning, this froggy morning. It's froggy out here on the highway.
Yes, it is a little bit froggy this morning, is it not?
I have a question. Can you put sod down over good old red clay, upstate red clay, or do you have to put some topsoil down on top of it?
No, you can. You know, it's our native soil. I think the key with that is we need to understand a few things about our native soil. Number one, it's prone to become compacted over time with traffic. And that doesn't necessarily mean your vehicle. That can also be foot traffic. So as long as it's not severely compacted to the point it's as hard as the asphalt or the concrete your driveway's poured out of, really all the grasses that we sell perform surprisingly well in red clay. Now, certain varieties we have, like St. Augustine, do better in more of a loam-type soil that's a heavier in organics. But you can, you know, use your native soil. I'm really big on that. But we want to make sure it's not compacted. So you'd want to till it 6 or 8 inches deep if need be, you know, if it's compacted that deep prior to sodding.
Okay, I was thinking about just running an aerator over it, but that might not be enough.
No, you can run an aerator over it and maybe get by with it. And then if you do till it, one thing I tell folks, if you're going to take the time to till it, you may want to add a little bit of organic content, some kind of decomposed organic mulch or something along that lines. And when I say mulch, you know I'm not talking about the mulch you would spread around your plants, but some type of good organic soil.
Decomposed leaves,
things of that nature, you know, some good organic-based soil and incorporate it into that top 3 to 4 inches. You don't want to just spread it on top because we have that red clay that has a tendency to become compacted. And the reason it compacts so easily, Ron, the particle size on it is so small. I mean, it is minuscule compared to the particle size of a grain of sand. So that's the reason the clay compacts more. But that particle size also comes into filtration rates of water. So if we put a nice, fluffy, organic topsoil right on top of it, 2 inches deep, on top of compacted red clay, now we just created what some of us in the industry would call, you know, a layer, or it'd be layering of soils. And now what's going to happen, that water's very easily going to move through that organic content. It's going to reach fill capacity, and it's not going to drain through that compacted red clay as quickly. Therefore, you get what we call a perched water table. The water's going to begin to back up on you, and your lawn's going to stay pretty soupy wet, especially after a heavy rain, longer than it should.
Do you think we're going to have any heavy rains this year?
None.
LOL.
No, I don't think we'll have any, man. I think, you know. So, who knows? We'll probably have one in an hour.
Yeah. We had one late yesterday afternoon.
Exactly.
And I talked to a friend of mine said this morning about 5 o'clock it was pouring at his house in Fountain Inn.
Yep. It has definitely been a wet one, that's for sure. So.
Well, I was just curious about the red clay and the sod.
Well,
thank you. Y'all have a great day.
You do the same. Bye-bye. You know, Scott, a lot of times it's really about using the resources that you have. And we've been given a large part of our listenership. We've been given this native red clay soil, as we call it. All in all, it's really not the most horrible thing in the world if you understand some of the particulars about it and how to utilize it and use it. Yeah, I remember years ago, I had an agronomy professor at Clemson said, you know, quite honestly, if you look at some of the physical characteristics of clay, it's almost the ideal soil on paper. The problem is that particle size, it tends to be easily compacted, a little bit lower on organics. So, but, you know, incorporating that organics will help you eliminate and shed off some of that compaction problem over time, if that makes sense. Scott, we had another text come in. It says, morning, guys, my peach trees are in full bloom, and it looks like I'm going to get taken advantage of again this year from a late freeze, Jim and Easley. Jim, I do believe that's probably going to happen because it's not just a, you know, if it was 28, 29, 30, 31, I think everybody would fare much better in a situation like a fruit tree flowering or some other flowering shrub out there. But when we drop down to 23 degrees, we drop down to 26 in that Columbia market. Scott, that's in the cities. That's in the airport. You know, where there's a lot of asphalt and a lot of concrete that gives you some solarization overnight. What's it going to be 10 miles outside of town?
Mm-hmm.
On the creek or on the river? It's going to be a little bit cooler, right?
Yep.
So be prepared. If you've got some things that you can move inside, I would strongly urge you sometime Monday, move those plants inside. You know, you can try a sheet. You know, citrus growers are going to ice their citrus when it blooms and they have a late freeze. So there are a lot of different things you can try to do, but at the same token, we can't overcome Mother Nature, right? That's a tough one. Scott, we're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Chip in Spartanburg has a question about fescue. Hello, Chip, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Yeah, hope you all having a great day today.
We're having a great day.
So I've got a fescue yard, and I've had poana problem for 2 or 3 years now, and so I seeded it this October with fescue, but I couldn't put out my pre-emergent somebody said 3 cuttings, so I waited till, you know, the 1st of December to put out pre-emergent, and I put it out again in January, and I got poana coming up again. So what's going to happen is this poana is going to die, my yard's going to look terrible, I've got to reseed it, and I can't put out pre-emergent, and it doesn't end. Is there a post-emergent, anything that would kill it?
You know, that's the problem. You're dealing with two cool season grasses. And from a residential lawn standpoint, there's just not much out there that's going to be 100% foolproof. Hey, go spray it, take care of it. I think, unfortunately, you know, like I said earlier in the show, and hopefully, you know, you're a listener that listens from the beginning, Chip, this is all about knowledge. And unfortunately, sometimes we learn things, but unfortunately in the landscape, we can't make those changes immediately. You know, this isn't like changing the color of the walls in your living room where we can make that decision today and it happens tomorrow. But what we can say, and what I would suggest, Chip, is work on fertilizing properly. You know, the 1608 Barricade is what you should be applying to your fescue lawn now. So it's pre-emergent for summer weeds. We want to prevent those because that can actually be more obnoxious than your winter weeds that you get in the fescue lawn. Let's do that, and if you wind up with a little bit weaker lawn because that POA checks out and you've got a few weaker areas, let's live with it this summer, okay? But what I think you're going to have to do if you're having this much pressure from POA, number one, let's address our environment because 9 times out of 10, POA tells me that you got two things going on in your soil structure. You got compacted soil and you got wet feet. Now, I know you can't control the wet feet this year. It's been too wet. But the compacted soil, we can work on that next fall. Maybe instead of aerifying one direction, let's aerify 3 directions if it's that compacted. The other thing, if we use, there's a pre-emergent out there called Dimension. We don't recommend it a lot because you're playing with fire, and if you mess up, you lose your investment seed. But if you put Dimension out and wait 3 to 4 weeks and then seed your fescue, the fescue will germinate. The Dimension will kind of check up the POA, okay?
So Dimension 3 or 4 weeks before I seed.
Prior, which is what you may have to go to. That's an old trick that some golf course superintendents used to use when they were trying to control POA in overseeded areas where they use perennial ryegrass. And it seemed to work okay. But you got to let that dimension kind of mellow out a little bit before you put the poe out. I mean, put the
So just maybe seed later, like end of November or something. But
we don't know. We want to put the dimension out earlier because I guarantee you the reason, even though you got the dimension out in December, you were 2 to 3 months late of getting a pre-emergent out because that poe was germinating about the time your fescue is germinating. So, but I don't want to push your fescue germination back into the end of November because then the soil temps are too cool and you may have an issue with that.
Okay.
All right.
I'll just get the dimension out in August or something like that. So
sounds great.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. You have a great weekend.
You too, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Scott, we're going to try it. We have about a minute and 25 seconds left. We're going to go to Ron in Taylor's. Hello, Ron, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Thanks, gentlemen. Hey, I just got a quick question on this pruning procedures here. One, you know, well, red bud.
Your red tips.
What are them? Red. I got red tips and red buds. I don't know which one's which. One of them has the disease that gets it. Which one's that?
Red tips.
Mixing them up. Okay, well, this red bud tree, crepe myrtles, and a. I have a, it's an evergreen of some sort, been there for I don't know how long, but I want to cut a big piece of it. It kind of grows up and then bends down and hovers around the ground. It has gotten some pollen already coming out, but with this weather getting colder, am I good to prune these things?
Yes.
And how late can I prune them things?
Yeah, you need to prune them now. Things need to be pruned in the landscape now. It is the end of winter. We're wrapping it up. Things need to be pruned now because after this last hard freeze, my prediction is this is probably going to be the last, you know, low 20 temperatures that we have at night. This is kind of wrapping up winter. We're the 1st of March. Spring's right around the corner. So any pruning you need to do, you need to get it done now.
Okay, and how about that evergreen I was talking about? There's a, you know, it's got a trunk and it comes up and then it kind of bends over. And I want to cut up back into about a 2-inch diameter section of that trunk. Am I good to do that, or is that going to cause a problem?
Yeah, I mean, I would try it. If it's a well-established plant, you should be okay. So I'd go ahead and do it.
Okay, great. Thank
you. All right. Thanks, Ron. Have a great weekend. Folks, you're tuned in to the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. We have to take the bottom of the hour break. You can give us a call during the break at 1-800-347-1063. The phone lines are open and text us at 71307. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is a delight to be here on a Saturday morning, although it is a little bit, as one of our callers said, a little bit froggy, right?
It is that.
So, folks, we really appreciate you tuning in. It's been very wet, reasonably mild the last couple of weeks, really, Scott, but looks like cold weather's coming. Come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it looks like it's going to be a little bit chilly down in the 20s. And we're getting a lot of questions, a lot of things. You know, we're wrapping up winter is what it is, Scott. And everybody's anticipating getting out. We want to remind you, if you're knocking around the upstate today and you're looking for something to do on a wet day, come out to the Home and Garden Show, sponsored by the Greenville Home Builders Association, at the Greenville Convention Center. Had to think there for a minute. A little bit of name change. The Greenville Convention Center, as some of you may know, the TD Convention Center, or for those that are like me and born and native of this market of the upstate, the old Textile Hall, we'd love to see you. We're in booth 313. We'll be there from 10 to 7 today and from noon to 5 tomorrow. So it's a good opportunity to come out, talk a little bit about your lawn, your landscape. Maybe you got a project coming up. Maybe it's a hardscape project, you know, nice concrete paver patio with an outdoor fire pit of some type or fireplace. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice.
Maybe you need to put a retaining wall in and elevate your shrub beds because of all this rain, everything's staying saturated. You know, elevated beds will drain a little bit better, Scott, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of hardscape product as well. So not as much on display in the booth, but a lot of information, some good knowledge. It's one of the things we're doing in our 7 retail locations in the state, a concentration we're trying to make. This year is to be a little more proactive in helping you plan into the future in some of these hardscape projects. So I'd love to have you come out. A lot of good reasons to come visit us at the home show. Next weekend we'll be at the Columbia Home Show. So, right? The company, not you. You don't have to shake your head no. So, hey, Scott, you know, the last caller at the bottom of the hour break, Ron brought up from Taylor's, brought up a good point. Pruning. And I want to say it, and I can't say it enough. You need to get out and prune those shrubs. If you're like me and you procrastinated all winter and you used the weather as an excuse, right, that you didn't do your pruning, you need to get out there and prune those shrubs. This weekend, after you visit the Home and Garden Show, will be a good time to prune your shrubs. Get it done. Don't worry about pruning just ahead of this cold weather. Get it done, right? Mm-hmm. Scott, we're going to go to the phone lines. We have Dennis in Lexington who found us during the break at 1-800-347-1063. Phone lines are open, by the way, folks. We'd love to hear from you. But for the meantime, let's talk with Dennis. Hello, Dennis, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Yes, I have a question about my poinsettia. Should I just let it die when the weather gets warmer, or should I treat that?
Yeah, what you're in Lexington, so I imagine my first guess is going to be centipede. My next guess, I was going to say Bermuda, but, you know, zoysia's gaining ground for lawns down there. So what's your lawn? Is it centipede?
It's a combination of centipede, Bermuda, and zoysia.
There you go. So you got them all, man. So, you know, Dennis, someday you might just have to make a decision which way you want to go. But at the same token, you know, we get that question a lot about lawns. And, you know, it's beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And sometimes you just let grow what grows best in that area, and there's no harm in that. So they're all grasses. They all grow great. I personally feel like, as far as poannual, annual bluegrass, we're on the backside. Once we hit consistent 80 to 85 degree temperatures, that poa is going to check out very quickly. Now, because the days are getting longer as well right now, you're going to begin to see it flush with seed. That plant knows it's reaching the end of its life. It's an annual plant. It is a prolific seeder. And it wants to reseed itself to give it some offspring for next year, the next generation. So you're going to have to combat a little bit of seeding and that kind of white seed top look a little bit. But if you mow it frequently to keep the seed heads at bay, if it's not interfering with the grass at this point, which it normally never doesn't really, other than like in a fescue lawn, that can be a nuisance. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, you could go out there with Monument, but the thing that concerns me is you got centipede and we're quickly, if not already, in some type of transition because of the warmer weather. If you look at centipede the wrong way during transition, it can wreak havoc on that lawn. So due to that and you having some centipede in there, I'm a little bit concerned about saying, hey, go waste your money on some product. Because I think these products may work slow, Scott. By the time they really work, I think 2 weeks after that, Mother Nature's going to take care of your problem anyway, Dennis.
Well, thank you. I don't have a lot of it, so it just got done raining, so I'm considering it's a nice day today, and maybe this week I'm considering going out there and just plucking it out of the ground.
You can do that. Just go out there and pull it. Make certain that we time our pre-emergent appropriately, you know, this coming fall in 2019, and hopefully that'll keep you from having a flush of poannua. So, you know, but no, I think it's one of those things. We're kind of in that middle ground right now. What do you do? You know, having some centipede in there, I think I'd do what you'd say. Go out there and manually pull it and be patient. What you can't get, it'll take care of itself here in probably the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Well, thank you. I enjoy your show.
Thank you, Dennis. We appreciate you tuning in today.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Scott, you know, great call. There's so many things this time of year. It's just hard to hit all the hot topics, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you got these winter weeds that are flushing, you know, henbit, you know, purple dead nettle. Do you know that it has a square stem?
No. Please, yes. Do tell me.
It has a square stem.
And it's in what?
It's because it's the same family that mint's in. All those plants in that particular genre of plants or family have square stems. So you roll up between your thumb and your index finger and you can feel it.
Real quick, so Mills came to my store, I want to say 3 weeks ago, and gave a class to the employees, a training class.
Yes.
The other day, I was sitting there walking, coming out of my office, walking to the front, and I heard Sam explain that exact same thing you just said to a customer.
It's just...
And she identified it. First, they thought it was henbit, and then Sam identified it, and it was purple dead nettle.
Yep. There you go.
And she had it in her hand. She was rolling it.
And identification is the key.
That's it.
You got to identify your weed species, your pest, not just your weeds, your fungus, your insects, so that you can choose the proper product to take care of that. And choose the proper cultural controls. A lot of this stuff culturally we can help.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not such a heavy persistent. It's kind of like the caller with fescue with the POA problems. I guarantee you that lawn is severely compacted, and the amount of rain we've had, it stayed severely wet. If you eliminate compaction and you maintain consistent moisture but not over wet, not overly hydrated soils or above field capacity, and you compare that as where as you compacted the soil and it was overly wet, you can see, if you didn't treat either one of them chemically, you can see you're going to have twice as much POA where it's compacted and wet versus where it's not compacted and wet. So cultural controls can be a very beneficial tool in the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And identifying the pests, that's how you learn all this stuff.
That's right.
You go read a little bit about POA, it'll tell you right off the bat, any university research is POA is prevalent in compacted wet soils. It's in the first paragraph, right? So what do? We eliminate the compaction, we drain it. Right off the bat, it's going to help us with our POA population. Scott, guess what? The sky is a funny color. I've never seen blue like that before. I thought our sky was supposed to be normally gray. I would love to know where that text came from that they're seeing blue sky. I'm hoping when I walk out of the studio, I see it. It's supposed to be, what, partly sunny today, I do believe. So that would be great. Scott, we're going to go back to the phone lines. We have, I believe it's Adam, has a question about Rosa Sharon. Is this Adam?
Alan.
Okay, well, it said A-L-A-M, so I took a stab and said Adam. I'm sorry. So I think we had a little...
Alan.
So an N, not an M. So, Alan, welcome to the Yard Pro Show. What can we help you with?
Tree farm, Rose of Sharon. I guess that's what you call them. Do Rose of Sharon get to be trees?
They can. Depending on the environment, they may naturally want to grow that way, especially if they're in a little bit, maybe a partly sunny, a little bit shadier environment. You may see that where they're stretching for the sun. And it could be, too, that somebody just cut the bottom limbs off and standardized tree formed it. You can do that with about any shrub.
I mean, I got about 8 of them, and they're about 15 feet tall. But they become real spindly and not producing a lot at the top. I don't know how far I can cut them back.
Oh, this is Alan. Hello, Alan. First-time caller from Charlotte, correct?
That's correct.
So here's the deal with those. Rose of Sharon, also known as a common hibiscus. Quite honestly, they grow like a weed. I feel like if you cut those back to a 4-inch stub, Alan, they're going to grow. They're tough as nails. I mean, they really are.
So if my trunks are like 2-inch calipers, 1.5-inch calipers, I want to keep the tree form so I can just whack them off anywhere.
Yes, you can. Now, here's what you got to do on the backside. You can whack them off. They're going to grow. They're going to flush. It'd be like crape murder to begin with, okay? We always talk about it. We preach about it on the show. Don't do that with your crape myrtles. But the reason we say don't do it, because nobody on the back end, they get in the habit of doing that every year. You can do this because I know you personally, but what you're going to have to do, you're going to have to thin some of those sprouts when we get to the before next season. Let it grow this year so you got a nice bushy shrub, but next year you need to go in and start removing some of that inner growth so that you can make it grow more like a shrub. As long as you know that going into it, I think it's a perfect plan.
Good deal, because I've been looking everywhere for the information and I can't find it. So,
yeah, that plant is tough as nails. So, how's life, man?
All's good, brother. All is good.
That is great.
Enjoy your show.
Well, I appreciate you tuning in this morning. So, be safe in your travels.
All right, man. Take care.
Thank you. Bye, bye. Scott. Man, he is going to wear me out today. That is actually a very dear and near friend of mine from the golf industry.
Ah.
Mr. McCurry, I think you may have met him several times.
Yeah.
Didn't catch his voice at front, but at first. But lives up in Mooresville. So appreciate you tuning in this morning, Alan. Really do. And great question. Shrubs, same thing. If we identify them like our pest, we know what we're working with, then we know what they
capable of tolerating,
exactly right. Yep. Right? We know how to maintain them. We know how to control them the whole nine yards. And we know that a Rose of Sharon, common hibiscus, it grows like a weed, folks. all across the great state of South Carolina and North Carolina, all across it.
One tough cookie.
Yes. So we know that that can tolerate. But I'll say this. You need to prune it now. Hopefully Alan's still tuning in, and he needs to go straight home and prune that this weekend and get it done. We're running out of time. Winter is quickly wrapping up. But I would like to see one more snow.
No.
Yeah, I'd love to have a nice snow, man. We need one. Scott, we're going to stay with the phone lines. We have Matt in Easley. Good morning, Matt, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, good morning. I've got Rosa Sharon. My grandma called it Confederate Rose.
Yep.
And it kind of ties into my question. I'm reclaiming an old home place, and as I clear out around the house and property, things are just popping up that were planted a long time ago, like irises, daffodils, Rose of Sharon. And another one is redbud, which there's a great big, what we call a redbud tree. And there's some descendants, I guess I'd call them, that came up in this field that bloomed. They had the same bloom, same leaves. And so when I was clearing out the field, I kind of marked them with ribbon and cut around them. And now they're standing out in the open, and I want to know what I can do to encourage them, how far they need to be spaced, and, like, if I should prune them right now.
As far as pruning, yes, if you feel like you need to do a little bit of tidying up, you're starting with, in essence, a sapling, and you're trying to make it turn into a nice, beautiful specimen tree, correct? One of the pretty thing with redbuds, however, I wouldn't limb them up too terribly high, because I think what's neat about redbuds, it's a shree. That's a good word. I didn't mean to say that. Because where I was going, I feel like, Matt, they're a tree, but yet they exhibit some of the nice things we like about shrubbery in the landscape. You know, they can be a little bit fuller, leaves a little bit closer to the ground, and then you get this nice head of blooms here very soon. Should be blooming. If not, there may be some red buds already blooming down towards the low country. I didn't see any when I drove to the Outer Banks the other day.
Yeah,
in bloom.
Go to my hometown.
Are they blooming?
I don't know. I'm going next weekend.
I didn't see any, but Cirsus canadensis. It is a native species. That's why you're seeing these pop up volunteering out in that field. Things that are native are pretty prolific at reproducing. That's why they're native, and that's why they've been here, in essence, forever. Great plant. If you want to do a little bit of thinning, shaping, so that you can train that, you need to choose a central leader in the middle. If you wanted a tree form, which I imagine you do, make sure we don't prune on it. We don't want to top them. But to thin them out a little bit would be great. Clip a few bottom branches to kind of force a little bit more energy this year for some top growth to grow up high. Fertilization, yeah, everything needs fertilization. I know it grows natively. It'll grow native in our soils, but at the same token, a little bit of fertilization can help you grow it and establish it a little bit quicker. So now is the time. You know, we always say, what, April? March, April, get a well-balanced, good, slowly release fertilizer. I know we sell a lot of triple 14. It's a 14-14-14 wood ace. If you just walk into one of our stores and say wood ace, they'll know what you mean.
Is this old family land that you're reclaiming?
Yes.
Oh, sweet.
But I would certainly encourage.
There's old irises, and there's lots of old flower beds, and
we may have to come out there.
It out.
Yep, and I think what you'll find is you start cleaning things out, like you said. Now the irises are popping up. You're over the years they probably got mulched too heavy, where they got too deep. Maybe they got shaded out by overgrown shrubbery around the foundation of the house. I think you'll see more and more of this, and because these plants have been somewhat neglected over the years, I would fertilize all the shrubbery in the landscape. I would do it, sometime March or April, and I would do it again in, like, September. Do it twice this year, and I think you'll really reap the benefit of it.
Okay.
And the good, it's what I call the old heirloom varieties of plants. To me, they're some of the best to grow. They have withstood the test of time. You can see how persistent they are in the landscape, and once you get them back in order, you should have a fairly easy maintenance-free landscape.
Have you heard of a variety of daffodil called Butter and Eggs?
That's what my grandma calls them.
No, I have not.
Well, apparently, it's some people have told me it's a relatively rare variety.
Wow.
That has more, I don't know, it's more floral, it's more bushy in its blossom than others. But I've got a bunch of these daffodils they call butter and eggs,
awesome.
Or at least in my family.
Well, and towards midsummer, you know, hey, the neat thing with that is they're daffodils. You can start digging up and dividing and moving those to other places in the landscape. So I commend you for what you're doing, reclaiming the old and having, in essence, what I would consider an heirloom cottage or country garden.
It's a double daffodil.
So it's a double bloomer.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So good luck to you. And if anything we can do along the lines to help you, we'd certainly love to help you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend gardening, Matt. So, you know, Scott, it's funny, man. We see all these new varieties of plants, right?
I'm old school.
And it's kind of different than, you know, last week I made a trip back out to Texas A&M and meeting with their breeding program and their breeder. And when we talk about breeding turf grasses, there's always a specific thing. Like some of these new varieties, you take Tamstar, St. Mm-hmm. Augustine, fantastic grass. It was bred to resist or have more resistance against pests, chinch bug and gray leaf spot. So there's a huge added benefit. When we get to shrubbery, a lot of it is bred for aesthetics. Well, we want this to do this. We want this color bloom. We want this many blooms. We want it to grow this tall, not this tall. There's some value there, I guess, but it's not like grasses. And my point is sometimes you got to go back to the old, what I consider the old heirloom varieties. You know, we talk about heirlooms a lot in the vegetable gardens, mm-hmm. right, which we got to start talking about soon. It's getting about time for me to plow that tomato patch. But we talk about heirloom vegetables. We probably don't talk enough about these heirloom, like flowering quince, forsythia. Now, people despise forsythia. You know why they despise forsythia? Because they don't plant it in an area that's big enough. Forsythia is a perimeter plant. It's not a foundation plant. It should be on your property line. It should be tucked back in the edge of the woods, right? Mm-hmm. It needs room to grow. But it's just like this. The butter and eggs daffodils, right?
Mm-hmm.
The old varieties of irises that come up. The eastern redbud, Cirsus canadensis. Just fun to say. Everybody say it with me right now. Cirsus canadensis. Come on, Alan. You're driving in the car. I can hear the background. I know you're saying it, right? It's fun to say. It's a game I play with the kids. It's how we teach that next generation to have an appreciation of what's in the landscape. And when I say landscape, I'm talking as a whole, in nature, in our environment, not just within our lawns. But if they have interest at a young age, they're going to have even more interest when they become our age. And if you think about it, we become more like our grandparents. Whether we like it or not, we become more like our grandparents every day in our life. And we all enjoy gardening. We all enjoy landscaping. That's why we do this show. That's why we're here. That's why we have a company called sure. Carolina Fresh Farms. Because we know you enjoy it, and we want to share that knowledge. And we want to make your landscape, your outdoor life, a little bit easier and much more enjoyable. Right?
Correct.
It's what we're all after. So, folks, it's been a great show. And wrap it up, Scott. We got a few minutes left. And let's see if we can get through some of these texts, because we've had a few good texts come in here lately. Can I prune mop cypress bushes right now? I would say yes. Let's get on it. Anything that you want to prune, I feel like, for the most part, outside of azaleas, do not prune your azaleas right now, unless you just like green azaleas and don't want buds or blooms. If you don't want blooms, go ahead and prune your azaleas. If you want them to bloom, don't prune your azaleas. Anything else, fair game. Good morning. Is it too late to spray Roundup in my Bermuda lawn today? Yes, most definitely. I don't think I would take that risk. Now, if you're a professional, I know there's some professional guys out there that are still trying to do it. They haven't been able to get to it because of the weather pattern. They know what they're doing. They can do it. But you as a homeowner, I wouldn't mess with that. Good morning, guys. Quick question. When would be the best time to top centipede grass, or do you even recommend it? Aaron and Easley. Yes, Aaron, if the lawn is uneven, especially in the upstate, a little bit heavier red clay soils, top dressing centipede can be a very beneficial thing, but we don't want to do it now. It is way too early.
Second week of June?
Second week of June, I would say at the earliest, Scott. That yard needs to be 100% transition, actively growing in the prime condition before we top dress it. And we don't want to top dress more than a quarter inch at any one event. We don't want to bury it too deep. Okay? But, yes, you can do that. There can be some benefits, but let's wait till June. My daughter's trampoline created a circular dead spot in my 419 Bermuda. We are preparing to sell the house. When might be the soonest to buy and install or lay more Bermuda grass to repair the area? The next soonest week. Would have to be now, by noon today, because our stores across the state close at noon on Saturdays. But if call our store before you go this late in the morning on a Saturday, see if we have any extra Bermuda. You could do it this weekend. That would be great if you want to do it this weekend. You can lay Bermuda. You can lay most warm season, if not all warm season grasses, in a dormant state. No problem with that. Get it done. Folks, it's been a great show. It's been a delight to talk with you today. We hope that you have a great week gardening. And more importantly, we hope that you will visit us during the week at CarolinaFreshFarms.com or perhaps on Instagram or Facebook. Like us, join us, follow us to get a lot of quick updated information of what you should be doing in your landscape. If you'd like to find us during the week, www.CarolinaFreshFarms.com. There you will find a link to a retail store near you. Hope you have a great week gardening, and we'll talk to you next week.